Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. This morning I'd like to speak on Sri Upadeshamrita of Srila Rupa Goswami. Yeah, of Rupa Goswami. There's one time I was in Puri Dham and I was staying in the ISKCON center there, and I went over the road to the Gauriya Math center that's connected with Sri Chaitanya Math and asked them if I could just borrow, because I was doing something, a copy of Upadeshamrita. And so a short overview of Srila Rupa Goswami's Upadeshamrita from Stavamala. It means in Stavamala there's many short works of his collected. This only 11 verses. It's published as a small book with a commentary by Srila Prabhupada, because he gives an extensive commentary on each verse. Srila Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur have also given the commentaries. I urge all of you who have not read this book to read it, and those of you who have read it, to time to time go through it again. It's very important work. It brings us from the beginning of devotion, or even before the beginning, you could say, to the highest level. Before the beginning, the first verse gives the prerequisites for even entering into bhakti. One has to be ready to control the mind and the tongue and the senses and anger and all these. Not that one has to completely control them before one enters into bhakti sadhana. No one has to be prepared to do so. The second verse discusses the six traits that can completely destroy our efforts in devotional service, and then there are the six traits that nourish and bring to perfection the practice of devotional service. Then the six kinds of loving exchanges between devotees, and then recognizing that there are devotees on different levels and how to behave with them is very important. It's not all the same, not that everyone's on the same level. Then what if we're advised especially to fully surrender to the topmost devotees, but what if we see in the topmost devotee there appears to be some defect? They have all the qualities of a first-class devotee, but there appears to be some material effect. We are advised to not give any value to that, not to consider it any kind of... The apparent fault of a great devotee should not be considered a fault at all, any more than the foam and bubbles that may appear on the surface of the Ganga are to be considered any fault. Then purification by chanting the holy names, that even if in the beginning we don't feel any taste, go on chanting, we'll get taste. And then the sequence of or how we gradually advance as we perform devotional service and come gradually to the approaching the raga marg, the path of worshipping Krishna in attachment, then describing the glories of various holy abodes, starting from Vaikuntha, not starting. The material world isn't holy and the Brahma Jyoti isn't even considered. So beginning with Vaikuntha, and Vaikuntha's up above us, but we go up and up and up, or Rupa Goswami in his description takes us up eventually to Radha Kunda, which is here in this earth, apparently. But we have to understand that that is the topmost place of all. And then, summarizing in one verse what Śrīla Sanātana Gosvāmī does in a whole treatise, his Brihad Bhāgavatamrita, gradations of devotees. Of course, Rūpa Gosvāmī does it in terms of individual names so much as Sanatana Goswami does, but he comes to the conclusion that Srimati Radharani is topmost and her Kund, Radha Kund, is the topmost. So this Upadeshamrita takes us to Radha Kund, and the last verse gives more about Radha and Radha Kund and the very rareness of being able to serve Krishna at this level. So it begins, let's get back to the beginning, we may prefer to hear about the glories of Radha and Radha Kunda, and we should do, but let's begin at the beginning. I'll speak about that especially today. It begins, Rupa Goswami begins with a verse which is not specifically composed by him. We'll find it in old Shastras also. That's not a fault on his part, it's a quality that he takes the best from Shastra. This appears in Mahabharata, this Vacho Vegam Manasakrodha Vegam verse. Begins with the six urges that urge us on in this material world and how they are to be quelled or quashed if we are to make positive progress, actually even materially, what to speak of spiritually. Someone whose senses are uncontrolled is even materially can't do anything of any note, what to speak of making any spiritual advancement. Or even religiously, there's total materialism, gross materialism, and then there's religious life, which we may take as pious life, and then there's spiritual life, in which we want to go beyond piety and impiety. So, to not make any endeavor to control oneself is totally in the mode of ignorance. Two of these urges relate to the tongue. The first one mentioned is Vacho Vegam, and there's Jiva Vegam. Jiva literally means the tongue, and Vacha means speech, so they're both connected with the tongue. Srila Prabhupada often stated that the beginning of spiritual life begins with the tongue, and he often said that it may seem surprising. I don't know about in your language, but in English, when I was a child, they probably don't say it nowadays because they changed their whole idea of how to deal with sometimes a parent or teacher would say to the child, control your tongue, or hold your tongue. They probably don't say this nowadays because you're not supposed to say anything to the children which might make them feel upset. But that hold your tongue doesn't literally mean to catch it with your hands, but to restrain it means the same thing. It means if the child is talking something wrong or blaming someone, or then the parent or teacher would hold your tongue. Just stop talking. Don't say that. So the two functions of the tongue are speaking and tasting. And Srila Prabhupada would say that it may seem surprising that spiritual life begins with the tongue. Then he would cite Atah Shri Krishna Nama Adina Bhavad Grahyam Indriyai Sevun Mukhe Hi Jivado Swayameva Spuratyata. Krishna, his name, form, qualities and pastimes, they are not understandable, are not recognizable, not perceivable, that's the right word, through the mundane senses. The senses have to become purified, beginning with the tongue. The tongue's two activities are speaking and tasting. Srila Prabhupada would explain this, that by chanting Hare Krishna and taking Krishna Prasad, that is the beginning of spiritual life. I'll speak more about the mind today, because the mind is the center of all the senses. Sometimes said the king of all the senses. And we're talking about the Vega here. Vacho, Vega, Manasakho, the Vega. It means the urges or the pushings, as sometimes Srila Prabhupada say, urging us, do this, do that. Yeah. So the mind is the center of all desires, emotions. How deep does it go? Very, very deep. Deep in my heart. Yes. You must have in your language also. You talk about this deep in the heart. Do you say that? The feeling that deep down in my heart. Oh, deep in my heart I do declare the truth shall overcome someday. The truth shall overcome. This we used to learn at school. That was fashionable at the time. This was I don't know how you say it in modern English, so you don't make any offense, a song by Negroes or whatever, that the truth shall overcome. The idea was that they're being oppressed by the white people, and the truth shall overcome, I do declare. Deep in my heart, the truth shall overcome. So deep in my heart. But we understand from Vedic literature and from Buddhist literature also for that matter, that deep in our heart, of course the problem with Buddhism is there is ultimately no heart anyway, there's no anything, but they have a lot of discussion of nothing, and it all comes to nothing in the end. Anyway, they've analyzed their very deep psychological analysis in Buddhism, that deep in the heart there are sanskaras, impressions, which become, going back millions and millions of lifetimes, and they gradually convert into vasana. This is what is deep in our heart. You may say, deep in my heart I have love for you. No, that's only a present manifestation of the deep desires in our heart to enjoy this material world. And sometimes they come up, like in a lake, a still lake. There's mud at the bottom, and sometimes some air which has been trapped comes up like a little bubble and pops on the surface. So deep in our heart, there are so many desire. Or vasana doesn't mean exactly a specific desire, but a general desire to enjoy in various ways. So it's very, very difficult to control the mind, because even if you have some thought and, okay, do this, and you know, oh, I shouldn't do that, okay, control. But there's a whole backup within the heart, within the deep consciousness, there's a whole array, practically unlimited deep desires there. And they come out, and then we're affected by so many desires. We don't even know how many desires we have. Even if we try to count the desires we have now, which are manifest now, and what to speak of those unmanifested desires deep within the heart, or the source of those desires, which means that we may control one desire, but there's plenty more willing to, and ready to come up at any time. So even the present desires we have, they're very strong. Arjuna compared it to the wind, chanchalang himana krishna pramati balavadrita tasyaham nigrahang manye vayoriva sudushkaram. He compared it to the wind. To try to control the mind is like trying to control the wind. He said this because Krishna had outlined to him the yoga process of mechanically trying to control the mind. And Arjuna said, it's like trying to control the wind. Even though the scientists, they may try to control nature in so many ways, they do so much research, but I don't think they're even thinking of researching how to control the wind. How would you control the wind? Well, you can do so on a small scale. You can just like plant trees so that the it breaks to some extent the wind. Build a house, live in the house. When there's a strong wind, close all the doors and windows. But to some extent, we can shelter ourselves from the wind, but we can't control the wind and stop it altogether. We can only take a little shelter by mechanical means. The wind is compared to the wind because the wind is swirling here and there, and you can't really say where it's going to go next. The leaf in the wind is blown here and there, the swirling wind. So the mind is like that. We can, if we step back from our mind, how do you do that? With the mind, you observe the mind. And you see how it's always swirling around here and there. There are different kinds of wind. There may be a slow, steady wind. But even such a wind, that if it's blowing all the time, just like on the in Ireland, especially on the west coast, there's always... You were near the west coast of Ireland, weren't you, for so many years? But you're on the western side. If you go out more toward the sea, it's practically all the time there's wind blowing, and you'll find that there's no trees there on the western side. They just can't get up. They can't grow up. There are some trees which grow. They manage to grow up if there's always a wind blowing. But the branches all on one side. It's as if they can't grow up properly. So it may be that we're strong enough to grow up, but in the wind to face it, but still we're affected by it, and our consciousness goes this way, in the way the wind blows it. And personal observation here is that even though so many members of the Krishna Conscious Movement all over the world have accepted this process seriously and study Srila Prabhupada's books. But we can see that the conditioning we have It's very difficult to overcome. So even though we're going up in Krishna consciousness, still that conditioning is affecting us. So we see the world through the eyes of the cultural conditioning that we have. Another kind of, the wind blows in different ways. I'm sure meteorologists, they have different names for this and they recognize this. There's some kind of wind which you don't see it in India much, or you don't see or you don't experience it so much. The wind comes in gusts. You know that word, gust, a gust of, means that it'll be still, fairly still, and then all of a sudden, big blast of wind. You have that in your country? I know you don't get that here much, do you? I don't not experience that. And then it stops. Then again, so you're going, it's, yeah, okay, fairly peaceful, and then a big blast of wind, and then again stop. And it goes on and off like this. So it may seem that, to use this in analogously to the mind also, that, oh, okay, now my mind is very peaceful. Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. And the wind blows. Have you experienced this? Soon as we think we're doing well in bhakti, yeah, I'm doing quite good, and then Maya comes and and then, okay, pull ourselves together. Then we think, okay, now I'm doing well again, and then wind comes and blows. And material life is like that also, that we think we're doing okay. Yeah, we got everything together, everything's good. And then all of a sudden, smashed. And then we build up again, and then smashed. And then that is material existence. So, Krishna, in response to Arjuna, he agrees. Arjuna's put a serious objection to all that Krishna's just been talking about observing the yoga process. Actually, we can understand, especially from the last verse of this sixth chapter, that Krishna was explaining the yoga process to evoke that kind of response from Arjuna. He didn't expect Arjuna to say, oh great, come on, let's drive our chariot off to the Himalayas and jump in a cave and sit down and start meditating. Krishna didn't expect that kind of response from Arjuna. He knew Arjuna, they're very intimate friends, and he knew that Arjuna, although he's very powerful, he's honest also, and if he has some failing or inability, he'll admit it. So he said, Krishna said, Asangshayang Mahabaho. He addressed him as Mahabaho. You've got great arms. You're a very strong fighter. You're not afraid of all these soldiers lined up against you, but with your arms, you can't control the wind. And with all your might in fighting, although the battle coming up is going to be a great challenge, no doubt, but the yogi who attempts to control his mind, he's taking on a much more bigger challenge. Because to control the mind is more difficult than to defeat all the armies of the Kauravas. So he agrees. Asangshayang, yes, you're right. You got it. Well done. That's exactly what you're supposed to understand. Asangshayang mahabaho mano durnigraham chalam. Same word that Arjuna used. Tasyaham nigraham manye. To control nigraha gives specifically the idea of controlling by force. There are different ways of controlling, but controlling by force. that mano durnigraham chala is very, very difficult. You're right, you're right. Durnigraham chalam, what's the next? Abhyaya, but, there is a way. Abhyasena tukontayava. Vairagyam, vairagyena chagrihyate. If by practice and by detachment, it is possible. In other words, the yoga process, although it is very difficult, it is possible. But not for everyone. For Arjuna, it wasn't meant for him. There are some yogis who are siddha yogis. They're perfect in their yoga practice. And of course, the real perfection of the yoga system, samadhi, when one's been through all the yamas and niyamas, this yama and niyama, the rules that one follows, has to follow in the beginning, that similar to the vajo vegam, manasa krodha vegam, all these things, not stealing, not lying, not cheating, observing brahmacharya, keeping clean, all these basic things. And asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, samadhi. So that samadhi is the ultimate state, and the ultimate state is dhyana vastito tadgatena manaso pashanti yam yoginaha. The real goal of the best yogis is to see in meditation Vishnu, and those who follow the Patanjali yoga system, for them it's a yoga chitta vritti nirodha, just stopping all the thoughts. Not very exciting, but that's it. They're only stopping the thoughts. Here we have chitta vritti. The chitta vritti is the propensities, proclivities of the consciousness. So here, vacho vegang mana, to talk, they're manifest as talking, eating, interacting with others by anger, and again talking with them. So these are all the proclivities of the mind. Patanjali, in his yoga system, defines it at the outset, just stopping all of that. But what Rupa Goswami will give is a lot more. That's the beginning. Controlling all these things, that's the ultimate aim of the yoga system. But the real best part of the yoga system is to remember Krishna and serve Krishna. For the yoga, for the meditative yogis, the goal of their meditation is to see Vishnu in the heart. So Arjuna spoke about controlling the mind. Arjuna spoke about it, but he said it's not possible. And in fact, although he gives the example of controlling the wind, Krishna had already spoken about that. So really he's agreeing with Krishna, what Krishna had said way back in the middle of the second chapter, giving a different example. Indriyanam hi charatam yanmanonu vidhiyate tadasya harati pragyam vayor navam ivambhasi. Giving a somewhat different example, again with the wind. Krishna says that someone who's trying to control the mind, but if the mind settles on even one object of sensual attraction, then it can be carried away just as a boat is carried away by the wind. Srila Prabhupada himself often gave the example, because he'd had the experience crossing the Atlantic Ocean in stormy weather in a boat. Even though in the harbor the boat looks big and strong, in the vast ocean, it's just like sometimes you see in a bucket there's an ant or some creature struggling in the bucket of water. So the big ship in the ocean is just tossed here and there, and there comes a point at which the crew, they can't do and they just close all the doors, close all the ports and pray to God. Strap them in cells inside. There's nothing they can do. With the, you put the engine on full, or we're talking about, of course, the sailing boat will go in the wind, you have to take all the sails down. But when the waves are being, they're blowing here and there, there's nothing you can do. Although these ships are constructed in such a way that mostly they survive. Although they can survive storms. But there are some storms which no ship will survive. So in the same way, we may think, well, my mind is pretty strong, so I can just indulge it a little bit. Don't trust the mind. That's Krishna's warning there. Now, of course, the process of devotional service, the best yoga, Krishna says that the best yoga, yoginam api sarvesham madgatena antaratmana shraddhavan bhajate yamam samayuktatamo mataha. He actually doesn't say what's the best yoga in this verse, he says who is the best yogi, but it comes to the same thing. The best yogi is one who taking me into his heart, worships me with full faith. So obviously the best yoga is this yoga process. So it's best because it aims at the highest goal of yoga. Yoga in Sanskrit means in mathematics addition. And viyoga means subtraction. Yoga means joining together, and viyoga means separating. So addition and subtraction. So what does it mean, yoga then? Yoga means, when we do yoga, what does it mean? It means adding something to ourselves. It's not all about just stopping the mind and the tongue and all these things. It means adding or fixing ourselves. So that the highest yoga is to affix ourselves to the highest goal of yoga, who is Krishna. The Patanjali system is actually subtraction. It's only maybe you should call it Viyoga Sutras. So just stopping the mind, stopping all that stuff, throwing it out. So it's the topmost yoga. Bhakti is the topmost yoga because it's you get the biggest sum. If we say karma yoga is 1 and jnana yoga is 10 and bhakti yoga is infinity. So we get the biggest sum. Another reason why it's the best yoga is because it's the best process for controlling the mind. This yoga process is yoga indriya samyamya. Yoga is meant for controlling the senses, of which the center is the mind, and the bhakti yoga is the best system to do so. But at the same time, there has to be some endeavor to do so. By bhakti yoga, in the perfect stage, then automatically one will not think of anything which takes us away from Krishna, viyoga. But in the beginning stages, there has to be some effort also to control the mind. But the process of bhakti sadhana, that's also meant for immediately controlling the mind by engaging it in Krishna's service. So yoga, the highest stage is to think of Krishna. Manmana, always think of me. Ananyas chintayantamam. Ananya Cheta Satatam. These words come up in Bhagavad Gita. But at the same time, there has to be some endeavor to control the mind. As Krishna also says, Asangshayatmana yogo dushprapa iti me matihi. Vashyatmana tu yatata shakyo vaptum upayataha. Krishna says it's very difficult to prosecute yoga, or what to speak of attaining the highest stage, unless the mind is controlled. But if one adopts the proper means with a controlled mind, then it is possible to attain. So, controlling the mind, how do we do it all of a sudden? Well, it may not be possible all of a sudden. That's why we have the process of sadhana bhakti. And that's why we generally prefer to speak from this end of the Upadeshamrita rather than the other end. Because the sadhana process should be in order. Everything should be in order. Otherwise, if we, from the beginning, without qualification, we try to come up to a level on which we're not fit for, then our wrong desires may cause our downfall. An example is Vrikasura in his dealings with Lord Shiva. He got a benediction from Lord Shiva which would put him in some ways on the level of power with Lord Shiva, that he could kill anyone. Then he immediately decided to kill Lord Shiva and enjoy Shiva's wife. He shouldn't have done that. Any person of any slight decency wouldn't want to kill your benefactor and usurp his position. Even this Nawab Hussein Shah, when his wife saw that he has some scar on his back, and he said that was done by the, what was his name, Buddhimanta, Hare Krishna. Who is that? He had a stroke or something? Okay, I guess we should look after him and we should go on with our class. Yeah, actually Prabhupada often quoted Buddhimanta Kamara Subuddhi Rai. So the Nawab's wife wanted the Subuddhi Rai to be punished by killing him, but even though this Nawab Hussein Shah was himself a great rogue who'd killed so many people, but he didn't want to punish Subuddhi Rai because he thought he's my benefactor. But this Vrikasura, he wanted to kill Lord Shiva and enjoy his wife. So if one is not properly qualified, then by controlling the mind, then if one tries to come to the highest level immediately, then one may try to imitate Krishna or foolishly try to take his position. So in the beginning we can control the mind by making a sankalpa, a vow to do so. Savaimana Krishna Padaravinda Yoho. And then everything else, Vachansi, Vaikunta, Gunanu Varnana. First of all, the mind to fix on Krishna, then the words. If we have the idea to fix on Krishna, then our words should be in relation to Krishna. Our activities should be in relation to Krishna. Krishna says, Manmana, always think of me. And then everything follows from that. Then we'll be his devotee. We'll bow down to him, we'll worship him. Of course, thinking of him not like Kamsa. Kamsa was always thinking of Krishna. And he said, how is he always thinking of Krishna? He was talking with his ministers, but in the back of his mind, he just couldn't get it out of his mind. Even when he was sleeping, Bhagavatam says, he was thinking of Krishna. That means he didn't get very good sleep. If even a great devotee can't get good sleep because they're thinking of Krishna and it's too intense and they can't sleep properly or at all. And a great demon also, they're in their subconscious at least, thought of Krishna is always going on. So even when he was bathing, when he was eating, he just couldn't get Krishna out of his mind. Intense remembrance of Krishna. So Narad Muni said, sometimes I think the demons, they're better because they so intensely think of Krishna. But that's not recommended. Anukulyena Krishna Anushila. Very favorably, or with a desire to please Krishna, we should execute devotional service. Now, of course, the Mayavadis, they think the idea is to just get rid of the mind altogether. No mind, no problem. All our problems are caused by the mind, right? Fact. It's a fact. So what's the solution? Get rid of the mind. Seems to make sense. It's logical, isn't it? Well, you can't really get rid of the mind at all. It doesn't really solve the problem. Even if you think you got rid of the mind's urges or the problems of the mind, then that still doesn't. That means if we stop the mind, then we stop all the bad thoughts. That means the mind is pure. Yeah, but not quite, because that's described in the Bhagavatam also. Yenye rindaksha vimukta maninas toyasta bhava devi shuddha buddhayaha aruhya kritrena parang padang tataf patantyat patantyadho nadirta yushmadangraya. Brahma, praise to Krishna, or the demigods, praise to Krishna, that some people who are not devotees, they think themselves to be liberated because with great difficulty, as Arjuna said about the yoga system, with great difficulty they control the mind and they go up to the impersonal Brahman. But because they neglect to worship Krishna, then they fall down again. Because the nature of the jiva is to be active. The nature of the mind is to be active. So we can keep it still for some period. Or we might just merge into that impersonal Brahman and stay there for a very, very long time. But because the nature of the jiva is to be active, again, we will come. Well, they will come. We're not going to come. They will come back. They'll fall down again to material life. Another example Srila Prabhupada often gave. Trying to stop the mind, it's like trying to stop Madhusudan and Padmanabha. Or any of the children. Tell them, sit down here and be quiet. Don't do anything. Just sit down. Stop all this nonsense running around all the time. Sit down. And as long as you're standing there threatening, even then they won't sit quiet. That's why you have to have a... Oops, can't say that in the left. You have to have a stick, actually. But even if you can get them to sit quietly, as soon as you turn around, they're up again and jumping around. It's like a child. You can tell them just sit and be quiet, but they'll jump up. They just can't do it. They're uncontrollable. Education. First thing in education is discipline, because unless the child's mind is disciplined, he can't learn anything. It means they have to have disciplined behavior. So then yama and niyama come first. If one's to take seriously to bhakti sadhana, one has to follow certain principles which don't, in, so that the mind is not indulged in all kinds of nonsense. Of course, it's said that in Kali Yuga, whatever sins we commit in the mind, you don't get punished. In previous ages, if you even thought of doing something wrong, you get a reaction for it. In Kali Yuga, you don't. So you may think, well, what does it matter if the mind is uncontrolled? Because thinking leads to acting. Thinking, feeling, and willing. Thought comes in the mind, we turn it over in our mind, over, shall I do it, shall I not do it, and then we do it. So although there's no sinful reaction for thinking of sinful activities, but still it's very dangerous because thinking leads to action. So what's the practical thing for controlling the mind? Engaging in devotional service. Bhajahure mana shinanda nandana abhaya charana aravindara. Again, we're advised to place the mind at Krishna, and then the rest of this song, or the next 2.5 verses, speak about why we should do so. It's very rare to get birth, human birth, and to get the association of devotees, so if we get that, we should take the opportunity and worship Krishna. And we should consider the nature of this material world in the two middle verses of this song. Discuss the very much suffering condition of material existence. So considering this, at least if our mind is not full of love of Krishna, which is not, which is why we're here in this material world, then at least considering for my own best benefit, I should take to Krishna consciousness. Nate vidu swarta gatinghi vishnum durasha ye bahirata maninas. Andhaya tan dairupaniya manas ti pisha tan tramurudam ni badha. The foolish people, Prahlad Maharaj says, they don't know that the goal of life is Vishnu, and therefore they cultivate all kinds of desires which are impossible to fulfill. Being stuck on the mental platform, external platform, they eagerly, they're all like blind people eagerly following other blind people. This way they all fall down and are bound up by very strong material desires. So understanding this, we should worship Krishna, place our mind, make the decision to worship Krishna, and of course, in this Kali Yuga, along with hearing about all these topics, we have to take up the practical sadhana of chanting the holy names of Krishna. And there's another song in this regard, Amon Harinama Karosa, mind, addressing one's own mind, make the holy name the essence of one's life. And the whole song describes why one should do so, understanding the great opportunity in Kali Yuga, how dharma, karma, jnana, yoga, yajna, all these different things, they can't really help us, whereas the holy name can. So I should take this opportunity. Name roti hoile premera udai premete hari ke pai. When we come to the stage of having actual taste for the holy name, then prem, love of Krishna, will arise in the heart, and by the power of that prem, we will attain to Krishna. In the meantime, the wind is blowing, the wind of our so many desires. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the example of cultivating the creeper of devotional service. creeper means that it's a very weak plant, unless it has a tree or a trellis or something to climb up, it will just go along the ground. It can't go up. So the creeper of devotional service takes shelter of the tree, who is Krishna, and goes up like that. But a very strong wind, if the creeper is weak, if the creeper is not strongly attached to the tree, then again the strong wind may blow it away. Or it may be that the creeper is growing, but there are other creepers or other material desires in the heart which are growing up alongside it. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu giving this analogy of the creeper of devotional service said, Pratamei shakha karaye chedam. Pratamei, pratam means first, and pratamei with the e at the end, it means, gives emphasis. Right in the beginning, these weeds, they have to be cut out. Because if we go on cultivating material desires, then they will choke or severely affect the growth, the inhibit, stunt the growth of the creeper of devotional service. Of course, mostly we find that even though Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says just cut it all out right in the beginning, but practical psychology is that, that's why we're doing sadhana bhakti, is that there's so many desires deep in the heart and they just don't go away immediately. Unless we're very fortunate or very advanced. Katvanga Maharaj, after not being involved in devotional service, his mind was completely absorbed in fighting for a very long time. He was able, just in the last muhurta, the last short period before his death, was able to fix his mind on Krishna. Parikshit Maharaj was also absorbed in material affairs, although by nature he was a great devotee of Krishna. When he got notice that he had 7 days to live, which was considerably longer than Katvanga Maharaj, he decided, now I have to do the best thing possible with my remaining 7 days. What should I do before death? Understanding that after death, the death of the body, that life continues, and human life is meant for God real or for advancement in consciousness. There's so many people, so many saintly people came and recommended different processes, that when Parikshit Maharaj asked, what is the proper use of human life, and especially for someone who is about to die, Mriyamana, one who is about to die. And so many people came and offered so many things, but Parikshit wasn't satisfied till Sukadev came and told him that for one should utilize one's human life for hearing, chanting about, and remembering Krishna. So at that point, Parikshit gave up eating and sleeping and practically not being even aware of day and night. He went on drinking the nectar of topics of Bhagavatam that emanated from the mouth of Sri Shukadev Goswami. So within that Bhagavatam, within the topics described by Krishna to Uddhava, he describes, Krishna describes the process of controlling the mind, the yoga process, by the yoga process, the mechanical yoga process. He also describes bhakti yoga, and a very scientifically, we can say, point by point analysis He states, Krishna states, what should we do? If we know that the goal of life is Krishna, and to be always absorbed in thought of Krishna, but we find that this great reservoir of material thoughts and desires is still there, it doesn't go away very quickly or very easily. So those who are on the path of sadhana bhakti and seriously trying to execute it can identify with this problem. It's a major problem. Why don't we just fully become absorbed in love of Krishna, which we've dedicated ourselves to do so? So Krishna advises in this regard. Jata shraddho matkatasu nirvinna sarva kamasu veda dukhat makan kaman parityage pyanishvaraha tato bhajetamang prita shraddhalur dhira nishchayaha jushamanaschatan kaman dukhodarkans chagarhayam. I'll read the translation that's given and then I'll discuss it a little bit. Having awakened faith in the narrations of my glories, being disgusted with all material activities, knowing that all sense gratification leads to misery, but still being unable to renounce all sense enjoyment, my devotee should remain happy and worship me with great faith and conviction, even though he is sometimes engaged in sense enjoyment. My devotee knows that all sense gratification leads to a miserable result, and he sincerely repents such activities. So jata shraddha, one whose faith has arisen in matkatasu, descriptions of Krishna's glories. There's another verse similar to that where the term jata shraddha comes in this Uddhava Gita. Yat dridchaya matkatado jata shraddhas chayapuman nanivirno nati sakto bhakti yogasya siddhida. Krishna says that if somehow or other someone's faith has awakened in topics, hearing about myself, talking about myself, madkatado, hearing about myself, serving myself, remembering myself, somehow or other, if one's faith has awakened in this, if someone practices bhakti yoga, not being disappointed, nanirvirno, because I can't immediately come to the higher stage, nati sakta, and at the same time, not indulging in material enjoyment, living in this world but not indulging in it, then such a person, by executing bhakti yoga, they can attain the full perfection of bhakti yoga. So here Krishna says that jata shata matkatasa nirvinna sarva karmasu, but in the other verse he says na nirvinna, not being disappointed, means not being disappointed with one's own lack of immediate advancement, but being patient. But here it says nivinna kasarva kamasu. It means not maintaining hope in being happy in this material world. But at the same time, knowing that material desires, inherent in them is suffering. Dukhatmakam kaman. That with material desire comes suffering. Although it seems round the other way, that's called maya. Maya means that which is not. But parityage pyanishvara, but still he's not able to fully give them up. Someone is performing devotional service with faith in the process. And he knows that material desires lead to suffering. And he's fed up with it. But at the same time, anishvara, he's unable to control. The force of desire seems so strong. Then what to do? Then Krishna says, in such a position, one should go on serving me with love. Go on serving. You may say, well, I'm not fit to serve. Anyway, go on serving. Whatever love is there, go on serving. Go on worshipping Krishna. Shraddhalur dhrida nischayaha. With great faith and with great determination, with the faith that if I go on, Krishna will help me. One, even if one indulges due to weakness and a little sense gratification here and there, it's not recommended. Gross sense gratification, not engaged. But even if the mind wanders off here and there, time to whatever. But one should be disgusted. My mind went on to that rubbish. And then, as Krishna describes again in Bhagavad Gita, yato yato nischalati manas manadur nigraham manas manas chanchalamastiram yato yato nischalati manas chanchalamastiram tatas tato niyam yaitad atmanyeva vashangayet. When one sees the mind is wandering off, yataha yataha, means gives the idea again and again, the mind wanders off, then again and again, bring it back, bring it back, bring it back. So Krishna says, in other words, Krishna says, okay, it's not so easy to control the mind, even in bhakti yoga. Keep on trying, keep faith, and eventually, if one goes on like this, bhakti yogasya siddhida, someone, Krishna promises, one who practices devotional service in a way, in this way, you will attain perfection. That's Krishna's promise. Hare Krishna. Any question about this? Yeah, anyone else? You always have questions. You're just bursting to very strong desire to ask a question, which is good. But let's see if anyone else has, because you tend to... It's all right, you don't have to be embarrassed, but tend to... jump right in there every time. Anyone else? No? All right, you have a question.
There was somebody is very neophyte and difficult to control mind. It's recommended to worship the deity.
When one is very neophyte and it's difficult to control the mind, one is recommended to worship the deities. Pujari should be a very sober person. Yeah, but worship the deities doesn't necessarily mean to be on the altar. You can also pick flowers for Krishna, grow flowers for Krishna, grow vegetables for Krishna. And all one's activities can be offered in the service of Krishna. One has to, when it's said that a neophyte person who is beset with lusty desires, neophyte devotees should worship the deity, it means they have to have some level. They can't just be a completely gross monster. They have to be able to control themselves enough that they can go through the offering a whole arti without stopping in the middle and say, hey, I'm going to go and smoke a cigarette. It's too much. I couldn't control my mind for 20 minutes offering the arti. There has to be some level of eligibility. Yeah, okay. Ananda Prashna. Ananda Prashna. Do you know what Prashna means? It means question.
Ananda Purna Vacha. Seems like Srila Prabhupada nothing to say about controlling urges in translation of the first text. He says that some person who can tolerate urges.
Yeah, he says to tolerate, yeah. That's a good point. Well, by tolerating the urges, you control them. In other words, when the thought comes, let me talk all nonsense, let it go. You don't have to beat it. Of course, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says it, to beat the mind with shoes. When one's mind becomes more advanced, then you don't all the time have to go around beating. To give an example, when When there are many criminals, then the police may just beat them all. But when they understand that they're going to get beaten, they behave themselves. And police see them. Okay, go. So in the beginning, one may beat or control the desires, but then they come and go. All right, go, go. That's all. No need to indulge them. Sarvamapi mam prithivin sasyashat. Someone who's going to make the whole world his disciple, it shouldn't be someone who's struggling to control the mind. The desires may come. As Srila Prabhupada often quoted, in this regard, yadavadi mamacheta krishna padaravinda nava nava rasa dhamyana rantamasit tadavadhi bata nari sangame smaryamani bhavati mukha vikara tushti nishivam cha. He gave the example of Yamunacharya. Well, it's quoted as being from Yamunacharya, but apparently no one in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya seems to know this. But in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it's quoted as being a verse by Yamunacharya, who says that ever since I've been engaged in the service of Krishna and relishing ever new pleasure at every moment in doing so, then whenever in my mind the thought comes of enjoying with a woman, my lips curl with distaste and I spit at the thought. So Srila Prabhupada sometimes quoted this to give an example that even though one may be very advanced, still thoughts may come in, the bad thoughts may come in the mind. But one doesn't indulge them. Apuryamanam achala pratishtam samudramapa pravishanti yadvad tadvad kama yang pravishanti sarve. Sashanti mapnoti nakama kami. The example given by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita is that just as rivers flow into the sea, they keep on flowing into the sea, but the sea is not disturbed. However much water is flowing in, the sea is so great that even though the rivers, great rivers, Amazon River, Ganges River, they may flow into the sea, is not disturbed. So in the same way, the thoughts may continue to flow into the mind, but the mind of a person who's oceanic, his doesn't become disturbed. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.